speak with Tom Ferrick, please.
Who's calling?
Brent Kelly.
Just a minute.
Thank you. Okay, great. Some people remember and some people don't. You have a good memory. Is this a good time we could talk for a few minutes?
Yeah, it's as good as any.
Okay, I really appreciate this. All the help I can get is greatly appreciated.
Okay.
I'll ask you just a few questions.
Sure.
Fairly general, maybe a little more specific. Anything you don't want to answer, you know, shoot, don't answer.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we come.
Okay, that's great. You were with the Reds during the time of the bonus baby era.
Right.
And that's quite a while back. So
it was the 50s.
So right, yes. 53,
50s, yeah.
53 through 57 is when they had to stay with the team for the
yeah.
2 years. The Reds had three for sure, Bobby Henrich, Don Pavletic, and Jay Hook. Al Silvera and Dave Skogstad, were they bonus babies?
I believe they were.
Okay, I cannot find it verified, but I can't find it not verified either, and I can't get in touch with them.
Well, Bobby Helfrich came from California. He was a bonus baby, definitely.
Who was that?
First, well, Henrich, Bobby Henrich.
Henrich, yeah. Yeah, he was, right.
Yeah, he was an infielder, outfielder, and hadn't decided. He had good physical tools. He was a young boy. I think he just got out of high school.
Mm-hmm, he did, right.
He was a right-hand hitter, right-hand thrower.
All the way, right.
And he was an infielder and an outfielder. And he stayed around the big leagues. He always had potential, but he never developed.
No, once the bonus days were, his bonus time was up. Well, actually, they ended the rule in 58.
Right.
And once he, now he was going to, I think he appeared maybe, in a couple of games down the road, but that was it.
He had a short life as far as a baseball career, I think. I don't know where they sent him to the minor. He was with us in spring training 1 year.
Okay, he was 57. He was there, played 29 games, only got up 10 times, so I guess he was running mostly. Then 58, he was in and out. 59.
Where did he go, to Indianapolis?
Yeah, he went down, and then he went
to the AAA club.
I don't know where he went after 59. I don't have anything beyond that, but
I don't remember either, because he never came back up to the big club, and I was there in through 59. No, wait a minute, 59 I was gone. 58 I left and went to Philadelphia as a coach in 59.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of lose track of those kids when you're in a major league and they're in the minors.
Well, what was, you know, obviously these were not accomplished, finished ball players at that point, but what the talent was there as far as you could tell is,
well,
in the case of Henrich?
He was an average runner, which was good. He's a good runner. He had a major league arm. He had a good body. And he looked like he had potential. You know, physically he looked like an 18-year-old would have some potential as far as his strength was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good arm, and it looked like he had good agility and good body control. So at that point, you didn't worry he would fit. You just had to send him out to play and see whether he developed or not. He had to be an infielder because he was not a very big guy. He was about 5'11", 175. So he was built more like an infielder, and he'd have to be a center fielder if he played in the outfield.
Uh-huh. Not quick enough for there?
Well, he was quick enough, but, you know, he'd have to be a good defensive center fielder to be. He was more or less of a singles hitter. He's not a home run hitter.
Right, yeah, I see.
Defense would have had to be his skills.
I know there are a lot of people who, no, they're not. There are several people, though, who think that most of these boys, not just your bonus babies, but the ones around the leagues, had they been given a chance, and they point to K-Line, that maybe they could have done it with such limited preparation. What's your feeling?
The thing was, though, you know, in those days, there was only 8 teams in both leagues.
Right.
So the competition was pretty good. Triple-A, Double-A was really an authentic form of baseball.
Right.
Nowadays, if he had those kind of stills, they would stay with him longer, and the competition down in AAA, AA, and A is not strong today. So they sent him out to play, and apparently he didn't develop well enough to become a major leaguer. He had enough opportunities, I believe.
He did not have the disadvantage of some of the boys of being stuck for 2 years since the rule was taken away, but still it was maybe too late. Don Pavletic, now, I spoke with him. Nice fella. He said that told him almost as soon as he joined the team to think about going in the service. He did develop into a useful ball player down the road.
Well, I remember Don. He's a big, strapping right-handed hitter. More, no, about 5'11", maybe 6 foot, but he was chunky body.
Right.
Catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he played a little bit of first base, but he was basically a catcher. A good bat. He could hit. You know, he showed that right away. When he had him with the Major League Club, which they sent him in for to be tried out and looked at before we even signed him. And I remember they did. They did try him out in the Crosley Field before they signed him. They had a major league pitchers pitch to him in batting practice, not letting him know what the pitches were. And he performed very well.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you check his career down the road when he did play, he did hit pretty good. He had some power. He was an adequate catcher, but I think one of the minuses was he didn't have a real good throwing arm, so he never became a regular.
Right.
That was a strong point.
Yeah, he hit... he had some good years down the road in the neighborhood of 300, but he played almost as much at first base as he did as catcher.
Well, he was more or less of a third-string catcher and a fill-in first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
And today he'd probably be a DH.
Yeah.
With a guy like McClendon over in Pittsburgh, play first base, catch, and DH in the American League.
Right.
That was his main tool.
Okay, what about his ability at that time? He was 18 years old. Would he have been able to play?
Well, it was very much in evidence that he was going to be a good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we put him through a test that, you know, Bertie Tepes was the one that did it, the manager. He wanted to see how they handle major league competition, and he put them right into the fire in the ballpark. Come out early a couple of mornings, and he had a couple of major league pitchers throw them, and the catcher was behind while he was hitting. And didn't let the young guy know it was coming, fastball, curve, or changeup, or what. And he handled it very well, so that was enough evidence for us that he was going to be a pretty good hitter,
mm-hmm.
which was an unusual test.
Yes, and
most of the guys they work out, they take him in the ballpark, and they say, well, fastball. Well, anybody can hit a fastball. When he starts throwing the curve and not looking for it, he adjusted pretty well.
He turned out to be probably one in the top 10 or 15% of the bonus babies when you look at his total career.
So skilled. See, if he'd had a good arm, he'd be a first-string catcher.
Yeah.
That was the only thing that kept him being a first-string. Very competitive guy, strong, aggressive, and he looked like he had the good tools to be a first-string, but the arm was what kept him from being a good catcher.
And that got more important about that time, too.
Yeah,
they started running more.
And if you can't throw people out, then you got to be third string and play first base, but they keep you around for your bat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another thing about that, too, you're going to bring up Jay Hook. He was tried out the same way.
Uh-huh.
I think he was a college graduate. He was an engineering student.
Hook was a little bit older, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, he was a college student, an engineering student. And they brought him into the ballpark. He lived in the Chicago area someplace, I believe. And
mm-hmm.
they,
Waukegan.
Waukegan, yeah. Well, anyway, he came in at the same time. They sent he and Pavletich in the same time. And I could come out early one morning. We brought out Smokey Burgess, Jerry Lynch, and a few other left-hand hitters and let him pitch to them and not let the hitters know what was coming. And he performed very well. He had a good fastball. He had above-average fastball, a pretty good curve. He was mature. And it looked like, under those circumstances, he looked like he had a chance to be a good major league pitcher. I don't think he ever, you know, had a good record. But the potential was there, and it's just whatever reason it didn't come forth.
One of the problems he faced down the road, he was with the Mets in their first couple of years.
Yeah, expansion years, huh?
Yeah. And he, although he was, I guess he was in the Reds rotation there before the Mets took him, but it was not a real good time for the Reds.
Record, I don't believe I remember that.
No. There's 1959, he was 5-5, and that's the only time he was even at 500.
Well, see, the thing about a young man like that, as hard as he threw, and he looked like he had a chance to be a pitcher, you would never give up on him real quick. He'd get more chances than the average guy that didn't throw hard. He had a good arm, a good curveball. It was just a matter of, you know, make up a little bit of, you know, make up and improving. And the other thing was, he was a very intelligent young man. I think after he got out of baseball, he went into engineering and was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't the usual type of a bonus player.
Yeah.
He had other avenues to go into.
Did he, as a having been to college for a while, did he show a little bit more ability to accept the major league life than the other boys?
Yes, he did. He was more mature.
Yeah.
He was a very fine young man, educated, and, you know, had some class. And it just, I guess, I don't know what it was. Maybe he wasn't cut out to be a professional baseball player, but he had ability.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed around a long time because he had the arm. And I mean, somebody, you always figure when somebody is turned away that somebody else could make something out of him. Maybe he needs more experience at one time. But it didn't work out that way.
No, he was always just seemed to be on the verge.
Yeah.
What about Dave Skogstad? He was only 17 when he joined you.
Well, he didn't stay with us too long. He was only up at a short time, I think, near the end of 1 year.
Yeah, that was when he signed in 57, and they did away with the rule, and he never showed up again.
Well, he was kind of a he had good, but he didn't have a great arm. He was a left-hander, of course. He looked like I think he came from California too.
I don't know. I'll tell you in a minute.
I don't know where he came from. But anyway, I remember him being with the Major League Club. They brought him up at the end of 1 year after they signed him, I believe. But he never did surface anywhere. You know, they sent him out to the minor league. He just was run-of-the-mill pitcher. He didn't have outstanding stuff. He was probably at his 17 or 18 as good as he's ever going to be.
Oh, boy. That's a rough time to peek at.
I don't know what his record would look like after he's been around so long.
Well, he only pitched two games. He was effective, evidently. He only gave up two runs one run in 5 2/3 innings. So
he's a league pitching.
Right.
Yeah.
But then he was gone.
He might have hurt his arm or something.
That's very possible. I've tried to contact him, have not gotten response. I've gotten response from about half the bonus babies, which
well,
I think
I remember the young
decent.
Man when he came up at the end of that 1 year. And he pitched a little bit. I think Bertie put him in just to get his feet wet. And, you know, the other bonus guy we picked up was Claude Osteen.
Yeah, he was under the different rule, though.
Yeah.
He didn't have to spend the 2 years.
That's right.
Yeah, but he sure did down the road pan out, didn't he?
Well, he was born and raised around Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And, I think Bertie Tebbets had a lot to do with signing him. I think Buzz Boyle was a scout, and they had trouble signing him. They didn't want to sign, so Bertie went in, and pretty good salesman. And his family didn't have, they were very moderate means. And Bertie went in, and if one of the things he did, it wasn't supposed to be done. He offered him a trip to New York with the club, bought him a new wardrobe and stuff like that, little incidentals, and gave, I don't know what they gave him to sign. It wasn't it was a very minimal signing bonus. But he was pretty well gifted. He was a good hitter, a good first baseman, basically a pitcher. He had a good curveball. He was a good athlete.
Uh-huh.
And later on, he got a chance to pitch, and he proved that. He was pretty successful. He's still in baseball as a pitching coach.
Yeah, and doing well at that, too.
He had the other qualities, a good competitor, and he knew how to pitch. He had baseball intelligence, so that carried him along in his career.
He was just 17 or so when you guys signed him, too.
Yeah, he was 17. He was very slight. He had a slight frame. He was left-left.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say Claude was about 6 foot, but he weighed about 165, 170 pounds, very slight, you know, physically immature. But he turned out to be a pretty good pitcher because he knew he learned how to become a pitcher. He had the good curve, the good changeup, and he was a good field and a good hitter. So he was a good athlete for a young boy his size.
Yeah, they all should turn out as well.
Yeah.
What about Al Silvera?
I don't remember too much about him. He was a boy from the coast. I think he was an infielder. He could run, and I don't think he played very much for us.
No, he played only one game in the field, and that was in the outfield.
Yeah.
He only had 7 at-bats in the 2 years. He was the first bonus baby you guys signed under that rule.
Yeah.
And he disappeared once he was sent out. He was gone.
I don't know what happened because he was only with the Major League Club a very short time. That disappeared, and I didn't. You know, I didn't have the opportunity to follow them all. So if I left that organization in 59, I went to come over here to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of concentrate on a different group of young people coming up to the majors.
Well, you can't keep track of what's in the past. Your memory, though, of the people I've talked with is head and shoulders better. This is great.
I was a pitching coach.
Right, I know. Yeah.
And, I can tell you more about the people that I work with than I can many other things. But baseball's in my life, and it's something I can remember.
Well, talking about being a coach, one of the things, I've talked to some of the pitchers. I've not talked with any of the pitchers you had, but I've talked with them on some of the other teams, and they have almost to a man said that the level of coaching they received was not what they thought they needed.
What are these, the bonus babies?
Yes, sir.
Well, there's two sides to those stories, you know.
Oh, sure. That's why I'm asking you.
The thing is, I've been a baseball man all my life, and I've been a player, a coach, and a scout. And I've always heard the song that, you know, I didn't get any help, or they tried to change me, or the coach didn't like me.
Yeah.
I've heard all those songs.
I'm sure there's one for...
Not all the time, but sometimes some people aren't coachable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they put the finger on somebody else. But I think everybody has a different way of approaching young people. See, at the major league level, most of these young people, when they get to the big league, they should be pretty well versed in what they're supposed to know.
Right.
And you see less of that today because they're pushing them too fast. Years ago, if you were signed by a ball club, you went down to the minor leagues with 4 and a half years before you got to the big leagues. And during that period of time, you were learning a trade in the minors, and basically by pitching every fourth or fifth day. And you did get, they had a minor league pitching coach, roving coach. Nowadays, they got a pitching coach at every team.
Mm-hmm.
But they have less to work with, I think, in some instances. It's an individual thing. Everybody's different. Every person, every pitcher, every player is different.
And, of course, has to be approached that way.
They have to be approached, and certain, some have to be pushed, some have to be petted, and some have to be, you know, prodded. And you find all degrees of intelligence and coachability.
Well, you get these 18-year-olds. It's changed. I know there's the high school coaching and college coaching is probably better today than it was 40 years ago. And, you know, I've got a son in college. I'll see what kind of coaching he's getting. And if it's better today, there was probably a real problem back then.
Well,
but
to get the coaching in my colleges and high school didn't pay anything.
That's true.
And you couldn't get somebody who was a capable coach who played professional baseball to depend on his living what he's going to make from high school coaching and college coaching.
Right.
You know, the financial returns were minimal. Nowadays, even most of the college coaches nowadays, there's very few of them that get paid a living wage. It's a secondary job for some of them, some of the colleges, except major colleges.
Well, my son's coach, his coach quit this year to go into something else so he could make money, and they couldn't attract a baseball man, so they've got the assistant basketball coach who's never played baseball as a college baseball coach.
That's as much as they can come up with.
Yeah, and that's...
High school coaches, unless they're teachers, it's a supplement. You know, the high school kids, high school coaches up here, they get $4,000 or $5,000 to coach the baseball team, but they have full-time teachers.
That's what we have here too.
And they depend on their tenure and their pension to fend. They're not going to make on what they make in high school coaching a high school baseball team.
So basically, these boys that were showing up then were pretty rough, to say the least.
Well, no, I tell you, California kids come to. They had always got better coaching out there because there were more players out there. And most of your high school coaches had played professional baseball. So they had a little bit of knowledge, better knowledge of coaches in other parts of the country who never played out in California. That's where most of the players came from. And when they got through playing professional baseball after 2 or 3 or 4 years, they had enough knowledge to become high school coaches, and they had a little bit more knowledge than the average high school coach in the country because they're involved in programs out there where they played.
Yeah. And it was promoted there. It wasn't promoted elsewhere.
Oh, well, they played more months of the year.
Yeah.
It's only been recently that Florida is moving into that category, becoming almost the all-year-round place to play. But years ago, the number of players coming out of Florida was minimal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second-largest state in the country now where the players. But the reason for that is they got American Legion, they got high school, they got junior colleges, more places to play. So the same thing was going on out in California years ago. Junior college and high school baseball and college baseball was a better class of baseball than any other part of the country. The proof of that is how many people come out of there.
Right, and the programs, Rod Dado down there at USC and those guys.
They had better college coaches.
Did wonders, yes. How were these young men accepted by the veteran players on the team?
Well, I think it depended on who was handling them, like the managers and the coaches. We did nothing to discourage them. We just encouraged them. And the only thing we tried to get to give them a certain amount of discipline, obey the rules, and find out what they were made of.
Mm-hmm.
You only do that by conversing with them and working with them. If you work with a young pitcher for any length of time, you get to know his habits and his what he can do, what he can't do, what kind of makeup he has. It all falls in place. You know, there's all kinds of people, personalities or whatever, temperaments. After a while, you've been around the business long, you can read whether a guy's got a good makeup or he can respond to challenges or whatever category he's going to fall in. Everybody's different.
Right. But as far as the veterans, I mean, they knew they were coming in. There was no problem with them.
None at all.
Okay, good.
Well, they were securing their job.
Right, except for the guy who got bumped when
somebody took their job. He had to be quite a bit better than they were. They were only rookies.
Well, you know, this in the case of these boys, they had to have a spot made on the roster for them.
Well, if they weren't ready to play in the big leagues, they wouldn't have a spot made. They don't put bonus players in the big leagues to keep them there. They try to educate them on how to keep them, teach them every pitch of batting practice and work with them on the sidelines, and then once in a while run them into a ball game.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't there to make the ball club. They were put there because they had to be kept there.
Right.
And during that period of time, wasn't any sense to let them sit on the bench without trying to work with them. Work with them before the game or during practice or different times and bring them out in the morning if they were players. So they did get some schooling and some knowledge of what was going on, but they really had to go out and play in the minors to develop their skills. Not they couldn't develop at the major league level under those circumstances. It wouldn't be fair to them, to the club.
Well, that's not the place. You don't become the head of don't become the head of General Motors by just taking the job. What about the adjustment of these young men off of the field? Was this a problem? Now, the college boys like Hook and some of the others, they probably didn't have the problem. They'd been away from home. But
well, they were more mature.
Yeah.
And they had been away from home. But they were supervised, even in their off-field habit. You know, coaches and managers don't miss much what's going on when you're on the road, you know. And you know what kind of habits they have sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
You have a way of finding out things whether you want it or not, accidentally. So during those days, they didn't have any bed checks, but you had to be in by a certain hour, and you just had to maintain a certain amount of rules. And it's part of being a disciplined person.
The boys, for the most part, handled it all right. I mean, I know a lot of kids get away from home and go wild.
No, well, they were monitored pretty well.
Okay.
They get off the track, they were brought in and talked to. And if they didn't respond, well, they just send them out somewhere until they get the message.
Did Bertie Tibbetts, as a manager, encourage the signing of these bonus babies, or was he given a choice?
Well, I don't think the manager or the coaches had any voice in that situation. The management, the general manager, the scouting directors, all had the decision to make in that field. We stayed out of it.
Yeah, okay.
It had nothing to do with it. We might make a judgment like this when Bertie brought in the Pavletich and Hook. Gabe Paul, the scouting director, he was the one that thought about this testing with live pitching and live hitting. It was a new facet. You know, you're not going to sign to a guy to a bonus, have him come in and pitch to the best hitters on your team, and he gets paid according to how well he performs against them. Most of the teams bring a guy and they work him out. They have him pitch in batting practice. They'll throw him on the sideline. They put a gun on him, see how hard he throws, whether the ball moves. It's not competition of any kind. Same way with the bat. You
got to
go out and see him perform in games to see how to respond in situations.
These boys that were brought in to be looked at there, of course, they were looked at closely. All of these kids were not. Was the scouting sufficient on them, do you think?
Well, the scouts sent them in.
Oh, okay.
The area scouts sent them in. And the scouting director says, well, come on into Cincinnati with them. We'll work them out. We'll see what players they are. But they had to be recommended by a full-time scout.
I see. Okay.
You just didn't send anybody in that you felt was a possibility. The full-time scouts were given that leeway. The scouting director had to let them give them the chance to bring them in. He didn't always bring everybody in.
Right.
Certain types of players that they felt were, you know, high good prospects, they'd bring them in and maybe introduce them to the players, get the feel of the clubhouse, and that might influence them to sign with that club.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we're probably going to wrap it up. Your opinion of the rule, of the bonus rule?
You mean at that time?
Yes, sir. As it stood when the two years were required.
Well, I think what they were trying to do is ownership had control of the game in those days. They don't have it today. You know, the bonus has made a complete turn on the wheel. You know, they got a guy in the first round draft, the bonuses, he can get $1 million, like the guy that the Yankees signed.
Yes.
It's gotten out of hand.
Yes, sir.
So the owners have no control of this. This is when they did have control. And they weren't making the money in those years because television wasn't as prominent in those days. Their Gates receipts weren't as high. So they had a budget they had to meet. players didn't make that kind of money, but they had to make some money in the business, and all of a sudden, television went out of sight. That's what popped the salaries way up.
Oh, yes.
They run the game.
They sure do.
They run the game.
But the rule as it stood, was it, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but was it as it unfair to both the team and the players as it seems today? It was.
It was in certain ways, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of clubs under the table.
Yeah. This is something very few people want to talk about, was the under the table.
It's all ancient history, of course.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, Gabe Poole was a stickler. He didn't want anybody to get more than 4,000. And that was a difficult way to scout because somebody else down the road would give him 4 under the table and give him 4 on top.
Right.
And as a result, some of them got better prospects, but it was illegal, but they were never caught.
Well, there were rumors of several boys who got under the table money. I cannot verify one way or the other.
And if late in life to go through that, it's all ancient history.
It is, and it
but
doesn't.
We know at the time when it happened that there were definite people that paid them under the table. And the scouts of Cincinnati couldn't compete with those other people. They knew who the prospects were.
Well, you always had the smallest market in baseball at that time,
right.
too. And that
right.
must have been tough.
They had a restrictions. And Gabe Poole had to operate under a certain budget, and we didn't have the same budget as the big financial markets had.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, they could afford to give him 4 on top, maybe 10 below. And if you're a young guy, you're going to grab the 10 regardless of whether it was legal or not.
That's right.
It never surfaced.
A rumor was strong anyhow. Barry Chitrone received money. He took 4. That's what he said he signs for. That's all he admits to. But, as you say, it's ancient history.
Barry Chitrone, he said, well, that's not, you know, it's nothing to be talked, nothing to talk about.
Well, that's what he says. He says he took four, he got 4,000. That's all he got.
That's all he also told you. Someone got more than that.
That's right. Okay, Tom, you have been an absolute wealth of great information.
Well, my business. My
I really appreciate it. A lot of the guys I talk to, they remember the names, and that's about it. And boy, you could draw a picture.
I enjoyed what I was doing. I still enjoy it.
Are you still in baseball?
I'm a consultant for the Royals right now. I go to the ball games here in Philadelphia during the season.
Well, that's a great job.
Yeah, I still enjoy going to the ballpark.
That's good.
That's what I want to do. Got to have something to do. You can't sit home.
That gets old awful quick.
Where do you live now? Where are you living?
I'm in Paris, Kentucky, right outside of Lexington.
Oh, Paris, Kentucky.
It's nice country. Not close enough to a ballpark for me.
Fort Knox?
No, Fort Knox over by Louisville. It's about 75 miles to Fort Knox.
Where did you say? Lexington?
Lexington, yes, sir.
I haven't been in Lexington in years. I went down there to see a ball player. It was so long ago, I can't remember who it was.
Well, it's a nice area, but it's sure not a baseball area.
No, it's a beautiful area.
Oh, yes.
Well, enjoyed talking to you.
Tom, thank you.
Your ventures.
I'm going to need it, and I really appreciate your time. I'll send you a book when it's published.
All right, I'll appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care.
Bye.
Sunday, 3:53 p.m.